and then for well over an hour she held a line toward the southeast. It was thick, gorgeous country, everything painted in blues and greens, and the engine gave off a steady, burbling noise that reassured her. A good story for dinner. Danger and high adventure. It might give John a few things to think about, like the priorities in his life, and where his marriage ranked, and how he was in jeopardy of losing something more than an election. You could get lost in all sorts of ways, ways he'd never considered. And she'd tell him that. Humming to herself, Kathy adjusted the tiller and began planning a dinner menu. 2 big steaks and salad and cold beer, imagining how she'd describe everything that was happening out here. Get some sympathy for herself. Get his attention for a change. The idea gave her comfort. She could almost picture a happy ending. After 20 minutes, the channel forked around a large, rocky island, narrowing for a mile, then breaking off into 3 smaller channels that curled away into the trees. The place struck her as both familiar and foreign. On a whim, she took the center channel and followed it through a funnel of pine and brush for what seemed far too long. Occasionally, the channel widened out, opening into pretty little bays and then closing up tight again. Like a river, she thought, except it didn't flow. The water beneath her had the feel of something static and purposeless, like her marriage, with no reality beyond its own vague alliance with everything else. Curiously, she felt no fear at all. It occurred to her that she was almost comfortable with the situation. She felt strong and capable. The same calm that came over her whenever she opened up a new crossword puzzle. All that stern geography to negotiate. A fixed grid full of hidden connections and hidden meanings. She liked unlocking things, finding solutions. For more than 20 years, she'd started the day with a crossword and a cup of coffee, easing into the daylight, enjoying the soft, flowering sensation that came into her bones as blocks of space suddenly took on clarity and design. It was more than habit. It was something in her genes. Even as a kid, she'd lived in a puzzle world where surfaces were like masks, where the most ordinary objects seemed fiercely alive with their own sorrows and desires. She remembered giving secret names to things, carrying on conversations with chairs and trees. Peculiar, yes, but she couldn't help herself. It had always seemed so implausible that the world could be indifferent to its own existence. And although she'd long ago given up on churches, Kathy couldn't help believing in some fundamental governing principle beneath things, an aspect of consciousness that could be approached through acts of human sympathy. Like John, she thought. All that sadness under the flat gray surface of his eyes. A good feeling to be away from it. Ahead, the channel widened out into a stretch of open water, deep blue and icy looking. She squinted up at the sun to calculate the remaining daylight. Maybe 5 hours until dark. Angle Inlet had to be somewhere off to the south, probably a shade to the west. She nodded to herself and said, "All right, fine," and fixed the boat on a southerly course, or what she took to be south, now and then checking her direction against the sun. The day was bright and windy, a string of filmy white clouds scudding eastward. She eased back on the throttle and for more than 2 hours moved through a chain of silvery bays and lakes that unfolded without stop to the horizon. There were no cabins, no other boats. Along the shoreline, thick growths of cattails bent sideways in the wind, and there were occasional flights of ducks and loons, but mostly it was a dull succession of woods and water. After a time, she felt a detached laziness come over her, a shutting down sensation. At one point, she found herself singing old nursery songs. Later on, she laughed at the memory of one of Harmon's filthy jokes, a chipmunk, a deaf rhinoceros. A spasm of guilt went through her. Not that she'd ever loved the man, not even close, but there was still the shame of what had happened back then. She pictured his bare white chest, the fingers so thick and stubby for someone who made a living at dentistry. Hard to believe she'd felt things for him. Enough, she thought. Leave it alone. Still, it was hard to keep her mind on the boat, hard to sustain much resolve. Overhead, a big pale sun burned without heat. The day was slowly tilting toward shadow. Her mind, too. Harmon, Harmon, she said. 5 minutes later, she ran out of gas. The abrupt quiet surprised her. Even with the wind, the afternoon seemed hugely empty. She was bobbing 30 yards off the shore of another small wooded island. For a few minutes, Kathy sat still. What she needed, really, was a nap. Curl up and let the waves rock her to sleep. Instead, she got to her knees, opened the red gas can, and carefully refilled the Evinrude's tank. At least she'd had enough foresight to stow the extra fuel. And the thing now was not to waste any. A good, steady speed, straight lines from point to point. She closed her eyes and jiggled the can. Estimated another 4 gallons or so, which was plenty. She said it aloud. Plenty. Then bent forward and yanked on the starter cord. The Evinrude gave off a weak whine. She tried again twice more, but there was nothing. Good thoughts, Kathy told herself. Good thoughts for good girls. She gripped the cord with both hands, braced herself, and pulled back hard. There was a short coughing sound. The Evinrude sputtered, then caught. Kathy gave it some throttle. Good thoughts for good girls. It was one of those proverbs her Girl Scout leader used to clip out of Methodist magazines and recite to the troops as a way of bludgeoning them toward rectitude. The old lady, Mrs. Brandt, she had banality to burn. A jingle for every occasion. Birthdays, menstruation, first love. Kathy couldn't help smiling as she turned the boat back into open lake. Never pout, never doubt. That's our famous Girl Scout. Right now, though, it was hard to push away the apprehension. The shadows were rapidly lengthening, and in the air there was the crisp, metallic scent of winter. A shift in the ozone, maybe. Mrs. Brandt would have been ready with all the technical details. When you're lost, look for the moss. It's on the north, so sally forth. It took almost 20 minutes to cross the open water. This time there were no channels south. Directly ahead, the shoreline loomed up as a blunt, gently curving mass of rock and pines, a long green wall arcing out in front of her as far as she could see. Kathy cut back on the power, idling offshore, trying to settle on a proper course of action. Nothing sensible revealed itself. She gazed at the dense forest, then up at the sky. The facts seemed obvious, lost and totally alone. And the physical universe had no opinion. Trees did not talk, no face behind the clouds, no natural laws, only nature. Which was the truth, she told herself, so she might as well get on with it. She brought the boat around and followed the shoreline in what she took to be a generally westward direction, looking for a channel south. The afternoon had passed to a ghostly gray. She was struck by the immensity of things, so much water and sky and forest, and after a time it occurred to her that she'd lived a life almost entirely indoors. Her memories were indoor memories, fixed by ceilings and plastered white walls. Her whole life had been locked to geometries, suburban rectangles, city squares. First the house she'd grown up in, then dorms and apartments. The open air had been nothing but a medium of transit, a place for rooms to exist. Very briefly, closing her eyes, Kathy felt the need to cry. Her throat tightened up. Don't be an idiot, she said. Just find a goddamned way. And then for a long while she followed the curving shoreline, moving at low throttle, watching the sun sink toward the trees straight ahead. The wind was colder now. She passed between a pair of tiny islands, veered north to skirt a spit of rocks and sand, then aimed the boat west into a wide stretch of choppy water. After more than an hour, nothing much had changed. The purest wilderness, everything tangled up with everything else. At best, she decided, the day contained another half hour of useful light, 20 minutes to be safe. She hesitated, then turned in toward a small dome-shaped island off to her left. No choice, she thought. Get some sleep. Start fresh. 30 yards offshore, she cut the power. Already dusk was coming down hard. The little island seemed to float before her in the purply twilight, partly masked by a strand of reeds and cattails. She unlashed the oars, set them in their locks, and began pulling in toward what appeared to be a narrow strip of beach beyond the reeds. It was harder work than she would have guessed. The waves kept turning her, and after only a few strokes she felt a dull ache settle into her neck and shoulders. Twice she got caught in the reeds and had to back off and pick out a new angle of approach. On the third try she stopped and pulled up the oars. "For Pete's sake," she said, "you're not a child." She stripped off her sneakers and jeans, moved to the stern, hopped out into thigh-deep water. The quick cold made her skin tighten. Partly wading, partly swimming, she got behind the boat and wrestled it through the cattails and up onto the narrow beach. She used the bow line to secure the boat to a big birch and then lay back on the sand to let herself breathe. It felt good to have ground beneath her. The darkness now was almost complete. 6 o'clock, she guessed. For a few minutes she lay listening to things, the waves and nighttime insects. Then she got up and took off her underpants and wrung them out. In the boat she found an oilcloth to dry herself. She put on her jeans, slicked her hair back, used the last slivers of dusk to do an inventory. There wasn't much. No matches or lighter. Nothing to eat. She had the life vest, which she now slipped on for warmth, and she had her wallet and a pack of lifesavers and a tackle box and some Kleenex and the gasoline and the 2 oars and the boat. In her pockets, she found a comb and a few coins. She dragged the boat higher up onto the beach, wedged a couple of rocks under the stern. It wasn't a beach, really. Just a ledge of sand jutting out from the main body of the island. It was shaped something like an arrowhead, 40 or 50 feet wide at the base, narrowing toward the tip. Behind her, where the ledge hooked up with the rest of the island, she could make out a long, dark smudge of heavy forest. Kathy spanked her hands together. "Well, let's go," she said, which gave her confidence. Quickly, she moved to the tree line and collected an armful of pine boughs and carried them over to a level spot beside the boat. In 5 minutes, she had a mattress. She covered it with the oilcloth and sat down. Good enough, she decided. And nothing more could be done until morning. She took out a lifesaver, leaned back against the boat, and looked up at a bright yellow moon rising over the pines to the north. She wouldn't starve. Plenty of fish in the lake. Mushrooms and berries, all kinds of things. Right now, she thought, John would be getting a search organized. Helicopters and floodlights. A whole army of Girl Scouts out beating the bush. Things would work out. She was strong. Good health, good brains. Yes, and in the morning she'd get out the tackle box and do some trolling. Pull in a nice big breakfast. Find a way to make a fire. Then look for a channel south. Keep going until somebody found her, or until she ran dead on into the Minnesota mainland. Easy, she thought, like 1, 2, 3. Kathy pulled her arms inside the life vest. For a while she listened to the waves, the swishings in the trees. Then later she found herself thinking about John. A New Year's Eve back in college, when they'd gone dancing at the Bottle Top over on Hennepin Avenue. The way he'd looked at her. No tricks at all. Just young and in love. Sentimental, maybe, but it was one of those times when all the mysteries of the world seemed to condense into something solid. people all around them, drums and guitars. But even so, they were all alone in their own little bubble, not really dancing, just moving, smiling from inside themselves. At one point, he'd taken her face in his hands. He'd put his thumbs against her eyelids. "Boy, do I love you," he'd said. And then he'd made a small turning motion with his hand, as if to drop something, and whispered, "Girl of my dreams." She'd never figured out what he'd dropped that night. Himself, maybe, or a part of himself. But it didn't matter, because in the morning he was stationed outside her dorm again. The same old games. And after all these years, nothing had really changed. The secrecy and spying, it never stopped. Not for long. And at times she'd felt an overwhelming need to remove herself from him, to make herself vanish, which was what happened finally. The thing with Harmon, it wasn't love. Not infatuation either, and not romance. Just the need to break away. Someone kind and decent. Kathy tucked her chin into the life vest, closed her eyes. Love wasn't enough, which was the truth. The saddest thing of all. She curled up against the boat. In the morning, she'd start fresh. Find something to eat and fill up the gas tank and see what the day brought. Fresh, she thought. Chapter 19. What Was Found. By early morning of the second day, September 21st, the organized search force included close to 100 volunteers, 3 state police aircraft, 2 patrol boats from the Ontario Provincial Police, and a U.S. Border Patrol plane equipped with air-to-ground optical mappers and a General Electric infrared heat scope. More than 30 private boats were out. Others were on the way from War Road and Baudette. The search zone encompassed more than 600 square miles of lake and woods. Nothing at all was found. No boat, no body. John Wade spent most of the morning on the telephone. Claude and Ruth Rasmussen took turns playing secretary, filtering out the news rats. But still, Wade found himself mumbling things to people whose faces he couldn't summon up. He felt tired and helpless. Just before noon, Kathy's sister called from International Falls to say she'd be coming in by float plane at 1 o'clock. Her tone was brusque, almost rude. "I'll need to get picked up," she said. "I mean, if it's no problem." 1 o'clock, Wade said. "Any word?" "Nothing. They keep saying to be patient." There was a buzz on the line before Pat said, "Unreal," and broke the connection. Wade showered, put on clean clothes, and made the 20-minute drive into town. Another bright day, almost hot, and the trees along the road flamed up in brilliant reds and golds. Now and then he'd catch a glimpse of the lake off to his right, which brought Kathy's face to mind, but he told himself to cut it out. Thinking wouldn't help. Not him, not anyone. As the road flattened out into open country, Wade tried to prepare himself for what was coming with Pat. There was a tension between them that never seemed to unwind. Cold civility at best. Right from the start, way back in the college years, Pat had always appraised him with a frosty, calculating stare, searching for the flaws, beaming in on him. Partly it was a distrust of men in general. 2 divorces, a long string of live-in boyfriends. 4 years ago, she'd taken up with a weight trainer at a fancy health club over in St. Paul. The trainer was long gone. But Pat now owned the club, and 3 more out in the suburbs. It was the only relationship that had ever worked out for her. A thriving business, and the sort of body you didn't insult. A hard case, he thought. And the trick now would be to keep a buffer between them. Polite, but plenty of distance. He pulled into the gravel lot behind Pearson's Texaco station. He parked and went inside. Art Lux was sitting at a pair of Marine Band radios. The sheriff got up, poured coffee into a styrofoam cup, passed it over to Wade.
"Not a whole lot to report," he said. "Still at it. Lots of lake to check out."
Behind him, the two radios made sharp, crackling noises.
"Got yourself some rest, sir?"
"A little. What's the plan?"
"Nothing fancy. Keep at it."
Lux pointed up at a large survey map tacked to a